Welcome to Comfortable Place on the Couch, a sometimes scheduled podcast where two Canadians talk about a band full of Australians
and a dearly missed New Zealander
to Midnight Oil fans in a town at the end of a railway line.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one, eh?
That's a good line.
My name is Darren Folds, and tonight I'm going to be spinning Midnight Oil's 2022 record, Resist. Joining me back on the couch is my good friend and fellow Midnight Oil enthusiast, Robin Harburn. Welcome to the couch, Robin. It's good to see you.
Thanks, Darren. Good to be back on the couch. I think we had a longer break since the Macarena, but not as nearly as long as some other breaks
That's true.
We've had.
We have had longer breaks. Yes, the intent was to stay on the couch.
Don't get off.
Don't get off the couch. We might not get back on right away, but here we are. Yes. It's like, if we want to get podcasts out this summer, this is the weekend that we have to record.
Yes.
Because schedules and stuff will just make things not happen until September if we don't do it right now.
You've got a busy summer.
I do. I'm happy to be taking some vacation with the family, and yeah. So tonight is the night.
Tonight's the night. Tonight.
Bruce Barry was a working man. He used to love or drive.
I don't know.
That
love or drive.
That's right.
One of the two.
Can I open up the mailbag?
Oh, yeah, please.
Okay, so let's open the mailbag first. Joanna writes to us to say, hey guys. She didn't say, hey guys. I'm putting words in Joanna's mouth right
now. She writes us to say, hey guys, but she didn't say, hey guys.
She wrote to say that there has never actually been a referendum on the subject of the Australia Day date. So there have been discussions of such, but that hasn't gone to a referendum, according to Joanna.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. Thank you for writing in, Joanna.
Yeah.
Anthony wrote, and this is very interesting. Anthony wrote in to say that he recalls, and this is talking about Terra Australia, and you know how we had the Bones credit on that song? It's like, why is Bones getting a credit on this song?
Yeah.
So Anthony wrote to say that he recalls that Bones was responsible for, now I'm going to have to explain this, the piano arrangement on Terra Australia, in that Bones was saying to the band, this song needs to be slowed down and made more piano heavy. So it was going to be traditionally a more oilsy song, but Bones said, this needs the, my father went down with the curse of big cities.
Like, it needs the In the Valley treatment?
I think so, yeah, that's right. So this was actually back in the Capricornia days. So this song has been around for a while. And that's when Bones was kind of giving Jim and the band that kind of idea. And when Bones died in 2020 and Jim was sharing some thoughts about him, he brought up this story and shared it.
Yeah.
So interesting. And I haven't chopped this one down, but this is from Jake. Jake is thankful to have us back on the couch.
Well, we're thankful to hear from you, Jake.
He was really excited to hear the musical origins of Gadigal Land, and he said that he had no idea. He loves hearing how the Oils and their side projects explore, reuse, and refine. And I remember we were walking the other day, and you were talking about Mr. Green of Hurst and Green.
Yes.
Talking about Rob poaching some songs that they were working on.
That's right.
Yeah.
And thanks to Jill for filling us in. She talked to Mr. Green about us, about the podcast.
Yeah.
And I think she was able to relay a bit of related reuse trivia back to Mr. Green, and he was surprised by some of that.
That's right.
Yeah.
So Jake was writing to ask and to ponder about that kind of stuff too, saying that he had read how Rob, quote, redirected material from that Hurst and Green project as well. And he also thanks me in particular for pointing out the similarity between Wind in My Head and Thinking About You by London Beat. Yeah, yes, someday he hopes to unhear that connection, and someday he hopes to forgive me for that. So thank you for sending in your email, Jake and Joanna and Anthony.
And Jill.
But Robin, we are here to talk about Midnight Oil's February 18th, 2022 release. Almost a year and a half after the Macarada project, we're here to talk about what we've got in our hands, our sweaty, greasy little hands right now. I've got the CD of Midnight Oil's release, and you've got your vinyl copy of Midnight Oil's release, Resist.
Resist, yeah. I got the double album, the gatefold release. And
is yours red? Red vinyl?
Yeah, I got red vinyl.
Me too.
And lots of greasy fingerprints on the almost all black outer shell. Like, I was trying to wash my hands before I touched it. No good. Grease. I am a greasy guy.
Yeah. Do you want to actually talk about the physical release? Do you want to get into that? Or do you want to talk a little bit about how the album came to be?
Yeah, maybe let's set it up a little. I have plenty to say about the physical release, but
let's set it up a little
bit. Let's set up a bit more.
Okay, so this is, as far as we know, Midnight Oil's final album.
Yeah.
We've said that before.
Yeah.
But this time it seems a little bit more certain.
Closer than ever. Oh, this reminds me, this is a morbid way of saying it, but I think we should give a Rob health update.
Yeah.
And it's actually more hopeful than we were. He's not out of the woods. He's not. But he actually is in pretty good, stable health.
Yeah.
Well enough that he was able to take the stage with his fellow backsliders and put on a gig. And we were kind of warned ahead of time that Rob would only be strumming on the guitar just to keep the physical impact down. But it turns out he did bring his kit, not like the huge kit, but he brought the drum kit. He played quite a bit of drums.
Yeah.
He was singing. His voice was more full.
Mm-hmm.
And he did play guitar and everything. He put on an excellent time. He, and all reports are that he really was enjoying himself. He was in his element.
Right on,
Everybody in the crowd was very happy to have him there. And basically he's doing as well as one could ever hope, I think, with his diagnosis.
Yeah.
So we're thankful for that. Yes. And that's exciting news. And thank you to the people who told me who were able to be there actually firsthand. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody put a video of a couple songs on the tubes or something like that. I was able to watch that too. And it was good to see Rob kicking and smacking and singing and doing what he does.
Yes.
It was really good to see.
Yes.
So that coming out of the idea that this is the Oil's final album.
Yeah.
Was it after this album that Jim was saying that? No. It was after the final tour that Jim was saying, we're not going to be doing the world tours anymore, but that doesn't necessarily preclude the fact that we may record together in the future.
Yeah.
Not promising albums, not even saying that it has to be an album. Maybe they could be one-off songs or something like that. This was prior to Bones' death a few years ago.
Yeah.
So perhaps that changes things as well.
Yeah, I think that changes things a little bit. I think there's a small chance we would still see a single. If there's a big enough event and Rob's health is good enough, I hold a little bit of hope that some small thing will happen again.
Yeah.
But we know for sure, I think we know for sure that there wouldn't be a full album, that there would never be a tour again.
You and I probably will not see them live again.
And we will probably never see them again. But at least we got, there were opportunities, we took them and we're thankful.
Oh yeah, for sure. So this album, written and recorded about the same time that Macerata was written and recorded. Really interesting to hear, even like from the emails that we received, that not only do we suspect that some of these songs came about post 2017 tour, 2018 tour, maybe even part of it during that tour, but even going further back, like poaching some Hurston Green songs, Terror Australia, perhaps reaching way back to the Capricornia days, that's right. Mm-hmm. But presumably a lot of this stuff was written in the 2017, 2018, maybe 2019 timeframe prior to the recording, because we were told that these albums were ready. Well, we were told about these albums in 2020, the beginning of 2020, right before the pandemic hit, I believe, right?
Yes, that's right.
And then we heard, okay, we're going to push. And eventually this came out like 2 years later, practically, almost 2 years after the beginning of the pandemic in 2022.
That's right. Because the last time we talked to Warren Livesey, the producer of this album, they were already recorded.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they were mostly mixed.
Yeah.
And
I think it was like only a short time before Macerata was supposed to come out.
Yeah. So it hung around, but because of the pandemic, like the Oils were on record as not ever wanting to be like a greatest hits band or a, playing the circuit, playing their old. Old hits.
Yeah, that's right. We're not going to do the spin the big chocolate wheel of songs. What was that called when they were prior to the Capricornia tour, or was it kind of part of the Redneck Wonderland tour?
I think it was the Redneck era.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they had that big wheel that they would spin and just do random songs from it. Yeah. Although
there's something to be said for that. Well, that's kind of neat.
Well, yeah, that was neat. What it showed, it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
It showed that they were ready to play like that had, I don't know if it had 100 songs on it, but it had like 60 songs or something.
Yeah.
A huge number of songs that they would actually just randomly, and then they'd be ready to just play them just like that.
Yeah.
So it shows what kind of shape they were in for being ready.
Do you remember that weird club that we saw them in Minneapolis where they had that thing? And there was like the two tiers. There was like the dance floor, and then above the dance floor, there was that wraparound thing.
That big balcony kind of thing.
But everybody was just like milling about there. It wasn't like balcony tiered seating or something like that. Yeah. But we were on the main floor. We were kind of close to the center, I think.
Although I feel like I did go up above for a little while.
Yeah.
And that was pretty fun.
Yeah, that was neat. That was neat to see. That was like a totally different kind of concert experience.
Yeah, that was a very different kind of show. And that's kind of a small place to play, really.
Yeah, yeah.
For them.
Yeah, that's right.
But that was just kind of where things were at
in
North America.
In those Redneck Wonderland years. Yeah, that's right.
So, that they didn't want to be a greatest hits band, and basically that they would always want to tour to support new material, because they wanted to still be, because they've always been so topical, they wanted to stay as relevant as they could, or there was no point to them. They didn't want to just rehash the past. So a new album was vital, like was super important to them.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And that's why when you look at the Great Circle Tour of 2017, not touring in support of a particular album.
Yeah.
But man, Pete sure had a lot to say from the stage was current and topical, right?
Yes, that's right. Well, his choices of t-shirt every night, I think quite a few times it said D-U-M-P-T-R-U-M-P.
It's kind of like, okay, we do have things to say. We like playing the songs. Yeah. We got things to say. And everyone was thinking, they're going to do a new album. They got to do a new album.
Yes.
So it took a little while for them to get out. And so, you and I were talking just the other day about how the environment, the climate, to use a term that may be like associated with this.
Political climate?
Sure, or it could be political, could be actual
environmental
climate or something like that. Yeah, was somewhat of a different thing when they were writing from when the album was released.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so if we want to talk about that now.
Yeah, sure, let's talk about that now.
Okay, well, let's get a blooper out of the way first.
Okay.
That's relevant because we're talking about the name of the album.
Right, yeah.
Which ended up being Resist.
But clearly they had other intentions. They had another name picked out for this album.
There was a working title of Show of Hands, which is a lyric from one of the songs.
It's from Bark a Darling River.
So that was the working title, and we had talked about kind of the quality control of the oils slipping.
Yes.
I think my theory is that when they used to run The Office, which was their physical office that dealt with all the business matters and so on, as far as I know, they had four women working there, some of them very sharp, long-time employees, and I believe those women were the quality assurance for the oils, who would catch all the mistakes and make sure they got fixed. So we've seen lots of bloopers. They're on T-shirts. They're on Macarada Project. And Resist, the physical release, has bloopers too.
Yes.
We'll just talk about one right now. We'll get to the others later. The CD version.
And you might not see this if you're just throwing it in like your old CD system at home, like your old boom box or whatever like that. But if you have modern cars don't have CD players, but if you've got something like from the mid 20 teens, perhaps like I do.
That's right. Stick your CD player in there and you'll get, your CD player will not say Resist on the screen.
It will call the CD A Show of Hands.
A Show of Hands. So somehow it may be that Emily Lazar, again, the mastering engineer in New York. Yeah. I don't know who made the goof. Somebody did.
Yeah.
But anyway, the CD, when it got pressed, you can encode a title and song names into the CD, kind of an extra layer above regular audio CD with some data on it that CD players pick up on. Yeah. And somebody had the old working title,
A Show of Hands.
So
now I'm gonna be nice to Emily at this point and say it probably wasn't her. Like, if she's mastering the actual music, she's probably not responsible for the setup for the digital pressing.
I don't agree, actually. Okay. Because I know my mastering software, part of mastering process is the actual CD layout.
Okay.
And there's authoring software where you're actually giving titles and all that. I can make those CD info discs with my Mac, with a program I paid a couple hundred dollars for, and you can put the title right in there.
Okay, maybe Emily. So let's talk about that. This one is mastered, again, by, I was going to say, our friends, Emily Lazar, and also Chris Allgood, but out of the same shop in New York as Macarada Project.
That's right. And the reason we're a bit hard on whether it's Emily, she's ultimately in charge, or her assistant or whatever.
In any case, the buck stops with her because she's getting the credit.
That's right. That's right. And it was because on Macarada, there were some terrible screechy sounds mixed in with Change the Date that really somebody should have picked up on along the way. And ultimately, it would have been her.
Now, I didn't notice anything like that on Resist.
No.
Tell me you didn't notice anything.
I will tell you, I did not notice any technical flaws in the audio.
Okay.
On Resist. So I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
So that was a long setup to say the album is called Resist.
Yes.
Yes. The meaning of that changed drastically. So when Resist was being written
in the 20-teens,
let's say it was 2019, it was pre-COVID, whatever it was, they had this idea of resisting, and you had Donald Trump in power in the USA, you had various conservative politicians in power, like in Australia and elsewhere, and the idea was very much resist the authority, resist, you know, this kind of right wing
that want to control you.
That want to control you and all this. So amazingly, once Resist finally shipped in early 2022.
The first song's actually coming out, the single's releasing in late 2021. The album comes out in 2022.
You're right.
Early 2022.
Yeah. Darren and I were going on walks. We were under all these COVID restrictions.
Yeah.
I would meet him at his house. I wouldn't come into his house. Yeah. We would walk outside and we would discuss. And both Darren and I were taking the COVID restrictions quite seriously.
Yeah, we were abiding by what our local health units were telling us to do, what's in our best interest and the community's best interest.
Yeah, that's right. We were doing that. And in the organizations we were involved in, we were trying to help follow those same rules to the best of our ability and be good citizens and so on. But that was a time that we started having a lot of pushback, I guess, against those sort of restrictions. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that the word resist almost took on an opposite meaning, or at least the...
It's almost like it flipped. The target that you were resisting kind of flipped, right?
That's right. So we went from being told to resist the right-wing oppression and so on, or whatever, the right-wing greed and the right-wing and all that kind of stuff.
Trying to control your life that
way. Try to control your life, and trying to like take advantage. And meanwhile, many of the governments had actually flipped in the respective countries to a more kind of liberal, left-leaning type government. And they were becoming, because of the COVID restrictions and so on, there was a lot of resentment against that authority. People were resisting, but they were resisting the opposite direction, so to speak,
exactly.
if you get me.
Because come 2022, like, we're a couple years into COVID, and it's like, things seem to mostly be quieting down and getting better, and like, we're still being told to distance, and we're still being told, you know, every 6 months, go and get your new COVID shots.
Yes.
And mask up. And not saying that these are necessarily bad things to do. Maybe they were good things to do to keep things coming down and down.
Maybe.
Yet, it seemed like these new people in authority, who maybe not even were elected to be in authority, were holding on to the power that they had and trying to, you know, without making the sound like more draconian than it needs to be, although some people thought it quite it was.
Yeah.
Taking that authority that they had and holding on to it and trying to maintain it and control. And
that's how it seemed to us.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Like, we kept
getting, when is this going to be over? We were told that this was going to be over.
This is the biggest thing. The authority kept dangling. They kept saying, just do what we say for weeks. Do what we say for months. It was trying to do what we say for years, literally years.
Yep.
And people were getting tired of it, but also we weren't seeing evidence that we were really going somewhere.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So what's interesting is it's just
the target of the resist.
What did resist mean?
Yes.
In 2019, what did it mean in 2022?
Yeah.
Pretty incredible, actually. And so you and I were listening to this album intently.
Yep.
And we were still trying to be good citizens. We were trying to think of that, but there were lots of movements around us where people were really pushing back. And they were resisting.
Yeah, for sure. And I remember having a period where I was listening to this album. Like, when it came out, I listened to it and I thought it was great and I really enjoyed it. But then later on, I was listening to it and trying to, like, you know, absorb, like, you know, when you first get an album, you just go with it and you feel the things and you hear the stuff and you're not overthinking things. Mm-hmm. You're just kind of absorbing it and enjoying it. So I had this period where I was, you know, listening and thinking, and some of the album for a time rang really flat with me because of, I think, the way things had switched, what resist meant and what resist came to mean, right?
Yes.
It's like, oh, this is harder for me to listen to and to get behind right now. I came to a place where I do love the album.
Yeah.
You know, but there was a time it's like, this is a little bit, I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know. Like,
I felt much the same way. And I think part of it, we were thinking about recording this episode.
Yeah.
Even back then
in
2022, here we are 3.5 years later, it's taken us to start talking about it. And that was part of the journey of it.
Probably.
I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's enough.
That's good. I think so too. Without belaboring the point, there's an interesting place where the Oils were coming from when they were writing this album. And it's interesting because now in some ways we're kind of back
we are back
to the late teens sort of, I don't know, environment. So resist is kind of come back to mean what they originally, I think, had intended for it to mean.
That's right. Like the U.S. has reelected that same government that inspired some of this.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Canada actually didn't flip back. We were so close. We were poised to do that.
Yeah.
And the U.S. results
suddenly
woke, I want to say woke everybody up.
Yeah. Scared people is
kind
what it did.
Scared people.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, we don't want this kind of conservative government. We certainly don't want the liberal government that we had.
Yeah.
Like, that was clear.
Yeah.
But we don't want what they have in the States.
Basically, I think most Canadians feel, or many Canadians feel, we've been betrayed by Trump.
Yeah.
Just say for sure.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, for people who don't know, we were kind of sick of our... when I say we, I mean there was a general consensus.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That the Canadian people were sick of their liberal.
When you looked at polling numbers, the majority of the country, like way more than 50% plus one, like you're talking 70-80% of people were ready to get rid of Justin Trudeau, who had been our boyfriend prime minister for the past 10 years.
That's right. So
that's a joke. That's what what people used to call him. Our boyfriend prime minister.
Yeah, he's got good hair, and
he's so cute.
Yeah. And so, so you go from that, and we were totally going to vote in a conservative government here.
Yep.
Just, it felt like the whole world was going that way, but the U.S. got there first.
Yep.
And then suddenly Trump is what
the poster child for conservatism.
Yeah, he's like the conservative guy. Like,
nobody wants that.
Well, here's the thing. At first we thought, oh, he's going to be our friend. And he's going to be a friend of conservatives everywhere. There's that thinking. I'm not so much speaking personally for us, but I think this was the feeling around much of Canada, not all of Canada, but then when Trump suddenly breaks our trade agreement that he signed when he was last in power.
Greatest trade agreement ever.
It was the greatest one ever. Suddenly he's violating that and he starts putting new tariffs on us. Basically, he's telling lies. We've never gotten this political before, have we? But anyway.
Welcome to the Canadian Political Podcast on the couch.
But I'm just trying to explain to people who don't know what happened. Everybody realized that Trump is no friend of ours.
Yeah.
And those kind of conservative politics aren't a friend of ours. They aren't what we want here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we voted another liberal government in right after. Like it went from being amazingly unpopular to just winning out of nowhere. We didn't even know who the new Mark Carney guy was.
Who was this guy?
Yeah. We just voted for him. Everybody voted for him.
Not everybody voted for him,
Robin. I know not everybody voted for him, but certainly he got in just like that.
Yeah. With a slim.
Yeah, but the conservative guy didn't even get his seat back.
Yeah.
He got destroyed. He was shoo-in to be the prime minister.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Without getting into any more Canadian politics.
Okay, that's enough.
So that's where we are in Canada. Is that where we're listening to Resist from in 2025?
That's right.
Yeah. So went from one thing, flipped to the other thing, kind of back to the original intent.
Yeah.
We mentioned mastered by Emily Lazar and Chris Allgood, produced again by your friend and mine, Warren Livesey.
Yes.
Yeah. What are you thinking as far as sound-wise, production values? Maybe compare it to previous Warren records. Maybe even compare it to Macarata Project, which we've been listening to recently.
Yeah.
Being recorded and produced at the same time. Maybe even some of the songs recorded interleaved amongst each other.
Yeah. I mean, it all has a crisp, professional sound. There's almost
what we expect from Warren.
Yeah, there's almost nothing to say about the production because I find the production feels almost invisible.
Yeah,
and the song,
in a good way. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. And the songs just are like Macarata had a lot more kind of downbeat, sort of acoustic songs, and this album just rocks a lot more.
Yeah, yeah. But that's not necessarily a Warren thing. That's an Oils. This is what the songs that they're writing and recording. Yeah,
that's right. And you can hear the similarity in production when you compare like First Nation and especially, what's the second
Gadigalland?
Yeah. When you listen to Gadigal and then you listen to like Rising Seas or a couple other, it's like, yeah, this sounds...
At the time of writing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like this is the same drum setup. This is the same bass.
Were there saxophones in Gadigalland, or was that just the trumpet section?
That's a good question. But yeah. So yeah, there's some guest musicians again. And
by guest musicians, you mean like extra instrumentation, like things like saxophone and violin
that
the Oils maybe wouldn't do unless Malcolm Byrne was around and he would do it for them.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yes. So it's more of a Glad Reed type thing or a Charlie McMahon type of thing versus a bringing in Emily Skye to sing on a song.
That's right. I guess I mean...
Maybe not even a guest musician, but a musician they bring in.
An extra musician for a particular track.
Yeah.
Just to do instrumental contributions.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Final album with Bones Hillman.
Yes. He plays good.
He does.
He does lots of fun
stuff. And they feature him too. Like they let him do his thing in just about every song you hear really cool bass stuff happening.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's time people give Bones his due.
Yep.
And realize he's a really good bass player. He's not just got the angel voice and does okay on bass.
Yeah.
He actually does...
And he can play stand in line.
He totally got. You know what? I think Bones kept improving right to the end.
Yeah.
He kept working at his craft.
Yeah.
And those years between when he was down in Nashville and making a living playing bass for various solo artists and so on, he just kept getting better.
Yeah.
He just kept working at it. So that's a testament to his determination and...
I don't normally have a lot of bass comments when I make my notes, but I found myself making more bass comments. Like, I'm sure you're going to catch them all. I'm looking forward to hearing what you've got. But yeah, I've got bass stuff that I want to point out here too.
Good.
Resist debuted at number one on the ARIA charts.
Yeah.
I don't think they won any major awards for it. They were nominated for a few.
Yeah, I saw they're nominated, but didn't win.
Some interesting... critical takes on the album. I've got a couple written here. Jeff Jenkins writes, "If Resist is the end of the road for Midnight Oil, it is one to treasure." Agree or disagree, Mr. Harbin?
Agree.
John Leeson writes, "The rage has been tempered by a sense of failure."
Mm.
And he also writes that the songs, quote, bemoan, that's the word that he uses, that the Oils generation has, and this is a quote again from John Leeson, has failed the youth through inaction. Mm-hmm. So almost like, man, we were young and passionate and we were calling for change and we were acting for change and it wasn't enough.
Yeah, there's that sense on the album, especially when you look at the lyrics more closely, like if you actually listen to the words, think about them, there is a sadness or a
resignation.
There is some element
of failure.
Yeah, an element of failure. And sometimes it's interesting when the music doesn't really always match that. But I'm glad the music doesn't always match that, because what a downer.
Yeah.
The album would be. It's a sense of realism too, right?
Sure.
It's sad, but on the other hand, it's them still telling it like they see it.
Yep, that's right.
And there's still an integrity to it.
Yeah, for sure. I think that this album sounds like 2002, we've got Capricornia, 2004, Resist comes out. I hear a lot of continuation from Capricornia. It doesn't sound like 20 years has passed. And I mean that in a good way. It's not like, oh, you know, the Oils haven't done anything to innovate over the last 20 years. I mean, it's like, yeah, we've got the Oils coming through 2 to 3 decades worth of material. Then they've got the time off and then they just kind of continue on rocking. And they've still got the, it's not that the sound is the same. It's not like this album sounds like Capricornia, but there are bits of Capricornia that I hear in this album that's like the best parts of Capricornia, right? It's like, it's not like I have to jump in and it's a whole new Midnight Oil. It's like, yes, this is familiar stuff. And it's nice that it's continuing on from the last album and continuing through.
Yeah, if I had to name just one album that this sounds like, I think that would be the one I'd choose. Yeah. It sounds like continuation. And in a sense, Capricornia was stepping back a bit after how experimental, you could argue, Breathe and especially Redneck were.
Yeah.
In a way, Capricornia went back a little bit.
Yeah.
Capricornia has a bit more to it than I think a lot of people give it credit for. Like there is still some distorted vocals.
Oh,
there
yeah.
are still, there's stuff going on there.
There's a little bit of electronic happening. There's a lot of rock happening. There's also the jangle and the sparkly guitars and the echoes and that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. I think if I had to name just one album, yes, this is a continuation. This is Capricornia Part 2-ish.
Let's talk about the physical media that we've got in front of us. You teased that there were some other mistakes, bloopers that you want to talk about, but we've got a record and CDs with us here. So let's talk about what we've got in our hands. It's something that we didn't do back in the original run of podcasts, like going through the...
Yeah, well, we had that hurried sense. Boy, can we talk about this album in just 45 minutes?
You know,
can we talk about it in 1 hour, 2 hours? We expect we are going to have many hours of this, and we're only going to get through a bit of it in this one, by the way.
our goal is to get through maybe three songs after we talk about the album as a whole.
When we finally get started talking about the songs. Okay, yeah, so the front cover, I've got the record here in my hand.
Yes, you do. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and so interestingly, it says Midnight Oil in white, and below it is a... kind of like a blue, let's call it a line chart, a bar chart.
Sure, yeah, bar graph. Chart, yep.
Graph, and it's going from darker to lighter, longer lines hanging down, and they're gradually going up and under the word Midnight Oil, and then it reaches kind of the zero, the axis, and flips, and then the line graph, instead of pointing down and being blue, it starts pointing up and being red.
Yeah.
And then under that, the word resist.
Yeah.
And so I suspect that this is kind of like a climate chart.
Sure.
Some sort of right?
Visual metaphor, perhaps.
Yeah. That you know, we're heading into this hot weather.
Yeah. Things have been like way below normal for a long time, according to this chart. I don't know what the chart means, right?
Yeah.
It's some interpretation of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what it's supposed to evoke, even if...
You know what? I look at it and I see like the bottom of an iceberg kind of too. Yeah.
Yeah. There's an iceberg.
So I think we got cold and hot going on there.
Yeah. Cold and hot and kind of a trend.
Yes.
Up.
Upwards.
And probably a trend towards... too hot.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's overall a kind of a climate change.
Yes. I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah. The other interesting thing is that the font chosen, Midnight Oil Resist, it's a very pixelated font, and it's actually extremely close to the font that was in use on Nintendo systems.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
It's got an 8-bit vibe, but particularly Nintendo.
When I looked at it, I first thought Nintendo as well, although maybe it's like just kind of 8-bit arcade kind of thing, but I think it's Nintendo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I actually, this is a little while ago, I'm not sure I kept my notes, but I think I went through and it's extremely close. Like some letters are identical.
Okay.
And others are close.
Close.
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
So got that pixely thing going on all over their website and stuff at the time too.
So I'm not really sure about how that's related. Did you have any ideas? Do they just think it's cool? Is this what this is what the kids are into?
And... that's the only thing that I could come up with either, because why would you, I don't know what the significance of a pixelated retro digital kind of mono bit, like a lot of the art, like on the back. You know, it's just one color type stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, I don't know why this was chosen, like why they chose to go with this, why this became like the Midnight Oil typography.
Yeah, I don't have a really good reason for it.
Man, there's like greasy grease on the back of your album.
That's why I told you. Yeah, you did,
but it's all over the place.
I know, it's super bad.
Past the French fries.
Yeah.
Past the Resist album.
Yeah, I know, it's so
gross. I need some more chips.
It's so greasy gross. I told you that. That's supposed to make fun of me more. I already admitted how greasy I am. Okay, Darren's confirming that, yes, it really is gross. Yeah, I guess I should have taken like something smeared the grease all over so it was at least even.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay. So on the back cover, there's a very sparse, it's all black, like we're saying, to show off my greasy fingerprints.
Yep.
And there is a red pixelated, what I believe is a globe.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I can see like North America on the top left quadrant and maybe Africa on the right, South America below.
Yeah, those are the right places for them.
Yeah, they're all in the right spots.
Yeah. And then there's a bunch of flames rising above, but it's extremely pixelated like you would see in a video game or something. The nitpicker in me.
I'm seeing it all over. You told me what this is. Yeah. And now that I'm looking at it, it's everywhere.
Yeah. So this trick kind of drives me nuts whenever I see pixelated stuff. Okay. Like if you don't know, Darren is as well. Darren and I are both old school, not just video game nerds, but we're actually programmers who programmed. I even have a YouTube channel where I've made like 210 videos about this subject.
Robin has programmed for fun and profit for decades. I do recreational programming. I've always been into computer graphics, especially like our old Commodore 64 stuff. Like we know this stuff.
Yeah.
This is our part thing. Yeah.
We're not just kind of posers. We're about as computer nerdy as you can get.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And so
old computer nerds.
So when you have pixels, Darren,
yes.
They're on a grid.
They tend to be on a grid, yes.
Right? That's the whole point in pixels is that they are individual pixel. They're called elements in a way, and they can either be on or off. They can't be kind of on, and you can't shift them around.
No, that's right.
They are a very fixed grid.
They are very strict in that matrix. You know when you have graph paper?
Yes.
And there's lines that go up and down and left and right?
That's right.
And they rigidly conform to the up and down and left and right?
That's right.
That's what pixels do.
Yes.
Yeah. Pixels must do that.
So what happens nowadays is because we have much higher resolution devices, whether it's our phone or even our computers, they still do have pixels, but they're so tiny that, you know, they might have 100 pixels in the space of where we used to have one whatever.
Those retina displays, they call them retina displays because your eyes cannot resolve the pixels.
Yes.
Yes. Right.
At a certain distance.
So yeah, there's pixels there, but you can just draw whatever you want and your eye's not going to be able to tell.
So what happens is we have fake pixel items where they try to deliberately, we're going to make that look pixely. Mm-hmm. But the artist doesn't understand the true limitations. And so they're drawing big squares.
Yep.
But they're just putting them anywhere they want. There is no grid. So unfortunately, that's happened with this art on the back. The main design is a certain pixel. It seems to all conform, more or less. Are there exceptions?
Oh,
maybe?
Yeah. Like, look at like these skinny little fjords here and here and here. The negative space.
Yeah, you're right, the main illustration.
Yeah.
But what makes it really
look at the gap here. Why aren't those two touching?
Oh, yeah, you're right. That is a bad one.
Oh, and this one, this is like a third of a pixel to the side. There's another. Oh.
But then there's a smattering of other pixels that are like, you know, little sparks or flames, embers, whatever.
Look at this one. This teeny little one. It's like a small one and the corner of that one is chunked out too. And that one.
Yeah.
They're all over the place, Robin.
Yeah. So
you've ruined this for me.
Yeah. So I guess I'm just saying, like, I know, like probably 95% of you are going, who cares?
Look at this little one. It's almost touching.
I know you don't care, almost all of you. If you're normal, you don't care. But what it does for somebody who...
You know what this is, Robin?
Yeah.
This is inauthentic. Yes. That's what this is.
That's right.
And to somebody who knows, this is like, why? What are you doing? Why are you even trying? You're not fooling anybody.
Yeah.
You don't know this. This is not your thing.
This is
inauthentic.
That's right. Exactly. It's not authentic. It lacks credibility.
Yep.
And it's below the oils. Having their artist who doesn't know what they're doing, trying to go into another world. We have to respect that in every domain, music and mastering and playing instruments and doing pixelated art, all these things are things that there are experts in the world and there are people who have mastered that craft.
And there are people who care about it.
And there's people who care about
it. Like some people look at it and say, that's cool.
Yeah.
And I like the feel. I like the vibe.
Yeah.
The vibe. I like the vibe of that. But then there's people to whom it matters.
Yes, that's right. So would you take somebody else's language and do a terrible version of it? Yes, okay, yes, I'm guilty of this sometimes myself. Oh yeah,
we
do it all the time.
There's a term for that.
Yeah.
It's called appropriation.
Appropriation, yep. Yeah. So
throw that one back at you.
Yeah. So anyway, I've made my point, haven't I? Okay, and while we're on the back cover, Darren.
Yep.
Did you notice the blooper on this one? This album is a double album. It has not two sides, but four sides.
Yeah.
They are labeled on the bottom, and it goes side A, and there's three songs.
I noticed this the other day when I pulled it on. I said, that's a weird way of doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Side A, side B, side C, side D.
That's three, normal.
Three songs each
per
side. Nope, but there's a mistake. Look at side D, Darren.
Side A has song 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
Side B doesn't have songs 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
Side C doesn't have 7, 8, and 9. Is that what you're talking about? Or is there something else
that's a little weird that they start to count at 1 again.
Yeah.
Well, it sort of is consistent.
It's consistent.
Yeah, it's consistent.
Maybe it's a bit weird.
Yeah, they could call it 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 instead. But no, just look at side D.
Oh, my.
What does it say?
Sice D.
It says Sice D.
S-I-C-E.
Yeah.
Oh. That's the kind of mistake I would make.
Yeah.
You agreed very quickly to that.
You're right.
Yep. Yeah. I would.
Yeah. Oh, we're really overdoing this, eh? But anyway, okay. So on the inside cover, Darren.
Yep.
We've got this pretty neat illustration.
It's a photograph.
I think it's a photograph that's been heavily filtered, polarized perhaps.
Yeah, filtered.
And turned into just a monochrome image where the inside's also all greasy black.
No, that's your fingers.
Okay, it wasn't greasy. The greasy's my fault. Basically, it's all five band members, Bones included there.
Yep. Bones, Martin, Pete, Rob, and Jim under a big tall tree.
Yeah, standing under a nice craggly tree. And basically the sky and their faces, their skin, are red.
Yeah, the light tones.
Are the light tones. And then the tree and their clothing and so on is the black of the album cover. So it's a monochromatic image. Maybe they've even deliberately tried to pixel it slightly, but I'm not sure.
I'm not seeing it, but old man glasses still getting used to the bifocals.
It would be a very, it's not like a really heavy pixelated look. And it also has all the band members' name in the Nintendo font.
Yep.
And then the lyrics for the album are on the opposite side of the inlay. It's tiny.
Yeah.
It's tiny. Okay. And then one last thing I want to talk about, Darren.
Yep.
It's a gatefold, so... The first six songs are on one record in the front. And Darren, what's wrong with this? What do you think about this?
It says Midnight Oil Resist.
Yeah, that's actually fine. It's just a very black sleeve that also shows all my greasy fingerprints.
I'm noticing I'm holding this now, and it's happening.
So maybe this is the problem, Darren.
Yeah.
The
slice is in the bottom. It's hard, I might give them a pass on this. Like, maybe you're supposed to read it like this with Midnight Oil on the left side.
Yeah.
Or maybe, you're a literalist like Robin and Midnight Oil must be on the top and the record just slides out the bottom when you pick it up.
Yeah, so basically you got a sleeve that is, of course, enclosed on 3 out of 4 sides, and then the fourth side's where the record goes in and out.
That's the way you want it.
That's the way you want it. If you hold it so that the printing says Midnight Oil Resist the regular way that we do English.
The normal way.
The normal way. Then the record falls out the bottom.
It is hard to justify it because, like, okay, it could be sideways, but that's not, is that, how do you normally, you know this more than I do, how do you normally put a sleeve in a record? Do you have it so that you can just open the side and pull it out without, or do you have it kind of locked in like this with the opening facing up?
I buy a fair bit of vinyl.
Yeah.
And the normal way is with the sleeve point up.
So this is dumb because Midnight Oil Resist is upside down.
It's upside. Resist is upside down if you put it in the normal way.
I would give them a pass if this was the sideways way was the way to do it.
If the printing was 90 degrees off, then you could choose to either have the sleeve up or, you know, you could choose. But it's actually upside down. And the record falls right out. So, and the one other thing is that the edges, is yours tearing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so the sleeve is actually ripping right on the
edge.
On the edge. Back edge. I've got albums from the 1970s that are in much better, the sleeves are in better shape.
Welcome to All the Mistakes Midnight Oil Made podcast.
Yeah.
I can't believe the poor quality podcast.
Do these guys even like Midnight Oil?
Do they? I don't think so.
Okay. So, everybody, I'm really sorry. And you know what? I've got one more really negative thing later.
Everybody, I'm really sorry, but it's not over yet.
I'm just warning you, if you hate the negative stuff, there's going to be one more.
There'll be another podcast.
Negative section. But you know what? I think I'll be like really positive after we get over that hurdle. Yep. Okay, so Darren.
Yeah.
I forgot when we were preparing for this.
Yes.
I actually forgot to look at my CD anymore.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it was in my van that got destroyed, my van that got racked. So,
here, I got my CD here for you to look at and all the nice stuff inside
of it. But you know what? I made the dumb assumption, it being a while since I looked at the CD, and I thought, you know what? I got the vinyl. That should be the premium. It should be as good or better in every way. So I didn't even look at the CD. And then I get here. Tell me about it, Darren.
And I've got my small CD here. Oh, but look at as I unfold. Let me unfold this large lyric sheet for you.
Yeah. So the lyrics for the CD version, you have to unfold it, but it is way bigger than the lyric
on the inside of the gatefold.
On the gatefold album version, the CD version, despite being all small, is way better.
It is. It's still small, but it's readable.
Yes. Oh,
but Robin, look at this. Let me flip this around.
The other side.
Look at this art. New art.
The other side has like a poster
of
another flaming globe. Again, red and black, not as pixelated. And there's a big hand
coming
up. And that's
almost looks like a movie poster.
Yeah. And that's the same thing that we saw up when we were at one of the Oils gigs.
Yeah.
They had that like projected
on the curtains behind
on
them.
On the curtains.
Yeah.
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 So
you don't get that with your fancy expensive vinyl release.
So the CD version has an insert with new art that isn't in the vinyl version at all.
I hate to raise your ire higher, Robin.
What?
Let me open up the CD case. Do you have this art?
What is that?
So on the CD, you know how on CDs you normally get like a little image or something like that?
Yeah.
So there's this like, I don't know if it's a drop of water or a drop of oil. It's hard to tell because it's on a black background with like some more charts and line bars and stuff like that. But you also, so you get that on your CD, which you don't get on your vinyl.
No.
And then inside.
Is that picture?
You get that extra art there and the inside of the CD case too.
So
all the bonus stuff in the CD.
So the CD version has extra art, two pieces of extra art.
It doesn't seem right.
That you do not get with the vinyl version. I mean, I appreciate that they make the CD version good, but why would they not give that to us vinyl buyers?
Yeah, that's what you would think. All the good stuff belongs in the vinyl package.
Yeah.
Yeah. You pay more, you get more.
It should be like if at the minimum, the same, but like bigger because it's like a bigger thing.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, man.
Anything else to complain about, Robin?
No. Well, yes, but not till we get to the songs.
Okay.
So I have some more stuff, but I'm going to be very positive. Guys, I love this album.
Yeah.
I love this album, but it's only because I look closely at things. I notice stuff. Okay. I don't really like the tendency lately to have a lot of double albums on vinyl.
Right.
Because a vinyl album has a limit of about 23, 24, 25 minutes per side.
Yeah.
So the maximum your album can be is about 45 to 50 minutes. And then that's why they go double albums. So
because you would suffer audio quality if you were trying to stretch it out. Or maybe it just wouldn't even work.
That's right. You're already, I think, suffering some audio quality problems once you push it to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just becomes, I think the grooves are just too tiny and close together and everything. Yeah. So it's a physical limit. I do like some bands do three-sided albums.
Oh, yeah.
So if Midnight Oil had done that, they could have done four songs per side. Yep. So you're just flipping the record less. And then the fourth side can have some interesting art on it or etchings and stuff.
Oh, okay.
So one of my favorite bands, well, definitely my favorite band from Duluth, Low.
Is that Duluth, Georgia?
From Duluth, Minnesota.
Oh.
Low, one of their albums, they did a three-sided album, and they had a really nice kind of etching on that last side.
Yeah.
So it's just like kind of this piece of art. It's really...
Yeah, well, that's cool. I guess it must be hard to resist the temptation of putting something audio on that fourth side, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, maybe we'll just throw on a few more songs, or maybe we'll throw in like some band jabber or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, although then that would give more reason to want the vinyl version to with that bonus content.
Definitely, right? Yeah.
Okay, and I think we do have to talk about the length of the album. Because did you know that this is the longest Midnight Oil album ever?
Really? I did not know that. 60 minutes, 4 seconds.
That's right. 60 minutes and 4 seconds. Do you know what the next longest album is?
I'll put a guess out there.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, but I'm going to say Capricornia.
Wrong.
Ooh, okay.
Very wrong, actually.
Yeah, eh?
Yeah.
I don't think it's an early album. I don't think that it's Diesel.
You're
Blue
right.
Sky Mining, it just takes forever. No. Yeah, I don't know.
It's Earth and Sun and Moon.
The best album.
That's 54 minutes.
Yeah, eh? Okay.
Next is...
Capricornia.
No.
Oh.
Breathe at 5129.
Another excellent, excellent album.
And next.
Capricornia.
No.
Oh.
Is Red Sails in the Sunset.
That's a good album.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
At 50 minutes and 33 seconds.
Okay.
And next.
Surely it's Capricornia.
Well, yes, but with an asterisk.
It's the American version of Capricornia.
No.
The Australian version has
the
extra song? What?
The European version is 48 minutes and 54 seconds because it has two bonus tracks.
Ugh.
Kiss That Girl.
Oh, yeah.
And Pub With No Beer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the US version is only 45 minutes.
Is that still like the next in line?
Because it has, no.
Oh.
Because it has Say Your Prayers added.
Right. Oh, man. Okay. I want to go to my office and see what, because I've got a few versions of Capricornia.
Yeah.
I think I have the US and the Australian version.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the Capricornia was actually really short. The Australian release was only 41 minutes, placing it way down the list.
Not in my heart, though.
No, not in your heart. But it's just funny that Capricornia was actually short. Okay. And to just quickly look at some of the shortest, Macarada is the shortest. So they released simultaneously the shortest ever.
And the longest. Well, but Macarada isn't an album. It is a project. It is, I've read it in places called an LP. No, not an LP.
An EP.
EP.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's consensus on that.
Neither do I.
Yeah, except for there are the definite EPs. Macarada is 33 and a half minutes. shorter even than the Blue album, the Blue Meanie, at 33:59.
Really? Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Head Injuries was only 34 minutes and 4 seconds, only 5 seconds longer than the Blue Meanie. Postcard goes up to 40 minutes.
Yep.
10-9-8, 45 minutes. Diesel, 46. Blue Sky Mining, also 46.
Really?
And Redneck, 47. So there was like a real...
Man, so many great albums in that list.
I think every one of them is is my favorite.
That's how it went. You know, one of these years when we finish talking about everything we need to talk about for Midnight Oil, yeah, we should start over at the beginning and do it again.
Yeah, we'll just do it again. So I've got one other nerdy thing left to talk about the album, Darren. You going to let me?
Yeah, get it over with.
Yeah, please. I want to talk about the album writing stats because this is like an overview thing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That's good.
Okay. Did you already do this?
I did write down, okay, but I haven't memorized like who did what. But I would tell you that my guess is that Jim wrote most of the stuff on the album.
That's right.
Yeah.
He is credited for 10 of the 12 songs. Yeah. But some of them were co-writes.
Yeah, with Rob and Pete. Yeah.
That's
right. I would guess that Rob has the next amount of credits and then Pete after that.
Funny.
Really?
Pete has 4 of the next 12.
Yeah.
2 of them are solo and 2 are with Jim.
Okay. I am not remembering that.
I was surprised too.
Yeah. I'm surprised.
So
for what it's worth, listener.
Yeah.
In the last week or two in preparation for recording tonight, Robin and I, well, I don't know what you've been doing, but I've been focusing. We've said, we're just going to do the first 3, maybe 4 songs.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been listening to. And that's what I've been paying attention to.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Because after we get through this huge preamble
and lose our listenership.
Yeah. I hope some of you stuck with us. Okay. Hearst.
Yep.
Only 3 of 12 songs.
Really? I'm surprised.
And all 3 were with Jim.
Yes.
No solo.
Nope.
Rob songs and no songwriting with Pete as well.
Right.
So there were no time where all 3 writers worked together.
Yep.
And Jim solo wrote 5 of the songs and then the 3 with Hearst and the 2 with Garrett.
Yeah.
So I saw some people criticizing that. I guess I want to remind people that that is for writing the lyrics and then having a general idea of the song. The whole band still collaborates.
Yeah.
When the song comes in, it might be Pete or Jim on acoustic guitar or whatever.
Yep. And they all have their suggestions. Yeah. And this is how I think that I'm going to play my part. Does that kind of fit in with what you had in mind?
That's
no.
Right.
Let me give it a try anyway and see what you think. Yeah. Oh, you like that? Okay, yeah, let's go for it.
Like nobody's telling Rob every beat to hit.
Right.
Nobody's telling Bones every note to play.
Yeah.
They do collaborate
all
through that process. And of course, Warren's contributing lots of ideas throughout it as well. So there's that. Are you ready to finally talk about the songs?
I am ready to finally talk about the songs.
Good. So am I.
So open up the floodgates to the rising sea.
So let's start with Size A. I mean, Size 1? No, Size A.
Yeah, we have to, when we finally get to Size D.
Size D. Let's start with Side D. Side A, Song 1. Rising Seas, 5 minutes and 50 seconds long, written by Jim Magini, released as the first single from this album in October 28th, as a matter of fact, 2021.
Yes.
So, is what I'm thinking. Rising Seas is about the seas rising.
I think you're right.
Oh, yeah, nailed it. Yes. So climate change, anticipated, presumed catastrophe that future generations will face. And this is one of the songs that we were talking about. John Leeson, one of the critics, one of the, what are they called? People who criticize things.
Yeah.
Critics. Yeah. Was saying
music critics
bemoaning that the Oils generation had failed the youth through inaction.
I think this is the
real
Yeah.
That's right.
The one.
This is an example of that shift to perhaps a pessimistic outlook, resolved to the consequences of their inactions. Not inactions, but not enough action taken, perhaps.
What a downer.
What a downer. And you know what? First time you listen to this album, this is a bold choice to start an album this way, right?
Yeah. Like,
so it's no First Nation coming out rocking, right? This is the organ, just a solo organ.
Yes.
And Pete bemoaning about the little children. What does he say? Every child, put down your toys and come in from the cold.
That's right. In fact, that my family, my faithful family servant, the van.
Yes.
I bought a big van way back in 2010. And as my family grew and grew, it's just become the thing. So every Sunday afternoon, I would drive a bunch of the kids to this Ukrainian dancing that we do. And I had the CD in the CD player for like months. And we would listen to it almost every trip there. And so, yes, the organ kicks in, and then almost right away, Pete sings Every Child, like that, right?
Yep.
And so when I'm in a goofy mood, the kids kind of found this intro a little weird, but, you know, we liked that. So I would actually press the rewind button, and I could make Pete over and over go, every child, every child, every child, while my children are listening in the back.
Yeah.
And they just start, eventually we'd just be all giggling and laughing at it.
Every child, every child, every child, every child.
That is now a nostalgic memory. I was hit by a drunk driver in March 2025, driving home from actually helping my dad, of all things. A drunk guy ran through the stop sign, absolutely smashed right below my driver's door. Mm-hmm. The impact forced me right off the road.
And this is a big van.
This is a huge, my big, huge, 15 my passenger big van. Yeah. So, and he absolutely wrecked his car, got out and ran away.
In the snow.
And I don't think the cops ever found him. I never heard if he even got charged. And wrecked my van. I mean, only because of the size of the van. If he had hit me in the door and I was in a regular vehicle, I might be dead or really, really hurt.
Yeah,
because he was doing like 80 or something. He pushed a huge van right up the curb and into the sidewalk.
And this is a residential neighborhood, too.
This is a neighborhood, yeah. Right. He just went through a stop sign. It was like after midnight. I was getting back from helping my dad at the hospital, of all things, and this happened. And
what does this have to do with the song? I love you, Robin, and I know this is an important part of your life. What does this have to do with the song?
Oh, I have not listened to the CD again since.
Yeah.
So this is the same block where I would drive my kids through listening to song.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I have memories of going there and my van getting wrecked on the way back and that family memory gone forever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's kind of like when I totaled my car listening to Too Much Sunshine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, we've both been in accidents with Midnight Oil going.
Yeah.
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 Anyway. Okay. Every child. Every child. Every child. You should try it sometime.
I will. I'll give it a go.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Every child. Every child. Every child. Put down your toys and come inside to sleep. We have to look you in the eye and say we sold you cheap.
Well, this is a daring choice. Like, you've got a new generation of people who've never heard Midnight Oil, a new Midnight Oil release.
Yeah.
And this might be the first thing they hear of them.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I mean.
Think?
Yeah,
what
like
they...
a bold choice to go with this, yeah.
That long, slow, it's like a confessional. It's like a very deliberate, it's evocative of like, it's like a church.
Yep.
It has like a confessional.
It's almost like a eulogy.
It's like a eulogy.
Yeah, that's right.
It's good. Singing to an organ, and it's very bare bones and very stripped down. Does it remind you a little bit of the beginning of Let's Go Crazy by Prince?
Dearly beloved. We are gathered here today. I had not made that connection, but I see where you're going with it for sure.
It's a very different mood, though, yeah. A very different context.
Yeah, we got the organ confessional, and before, like, the bass and the drums come in.
Yeah, no, it's just nice to hear Bones do this interesting little rising bass bit, and that comes back down and descends. Yeah, and it's just a nice little bit of accompaniment. It's kind of like in the Macarada project, while they're talking and talking, you know, they're
in the Statement from the Heart.
Statement from the Heart. I am glad musically for when the bass starts coming in. Yeah. And there's just this musical interest going on. Yep. And of course, Jim's doing neat sounds and stuff. So this is like a shorter version of that. But when you just have Pete just doing his let's confess kind of thing. Yep. Yeah, then the bass is kind of bringing, anchoring that more.
Yeah.
And of course, the organ's nice. Like, oh, yeah, for sure. Organ.
But then, 49 seconds, this is when the band is going to come in. And we've got that. I think I've described things in the past as it sounds like the air's being sucked out of something. Yeah. And then the drum comes in the snare with the big snare crack, right? So it's like whoosh, crack. And then bass, drums, band playing the song. Yeah. Here comes the rock.
That's right. The Rock is here. And I remember hearing this for the first time. Like, they released the video. I was like, yes. I was very happy to see and hear. And those jangly guitars, there's that, I guess it's a 12-string he's playing. I'm not positive, but it has that lovely ringing kind of sound.
The guitars really remind me of Capricornia. So so this song in particular is like, oh yeah, this is Capricornia. These are some of those Capricornia sounds that I love.
Yeah, and that reminds me of something right out of Blue Sky Mining or something like that.
To me, that's a Capricornia type sound too.
Yeah, so it's really neat how the Oils, maybe more than any band that I can think of, rather than doing like solos and stuff, they will do these simple lines, but play them so confidently, but still kind of sparsely. The guitars are so good that they're just not always having a go, go, go.
Yeah. They don't have to throw a solo in. It's not even like a hook. It's just some spice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, they'll strum a chord and they'll just let it ring. Mm-hmm. Jim will, and then Martin will, and they'll play an arpeggio and they'll just let it ring. Yeah. And then they'll be silent. You know, you can hear the bass and the drums keep chugging away. And then the guitars are all these flavors around it. Sure. Yeah.
Yep. So this song is interesting. So we've got like that intro, and then we've got maybe that's the first verse. And then we've got a distinct pre-chorus, I think, coming in before the big chorus run. So the pre-chorus, I think, is the if you can't decide.
Yes.
Pete is singing the lead here, but the other guys are doing the background echoes to that.
Yeah, they're doing these echoes, yeah.
Who are you hearing singing there? Is that Bones? Is that Rob? Is that Jim? I think.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, it is. I think that we have more Jim singing background BGVs on this album than maybe we have on, I don't want to say on any other Oils album.
Yeah.
But I think that Jim is doing a lot of BGVs on this album.
Yeah, I think he is too. I think they actually have Pete do his own.
I do too. Sometimes I think that Pete's in the background song as well. Yep, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But yes. Yeah. No, I agree. I think we are hearing more Jim. It might be partly on purpose that Rob, as he was having more problems with his kind of asthma and so on, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He was deliberately singing less. I think he wants to keep it more true to how they'll do it live.
Right.
So I think he just has been doing less singing.
Okay.
And maybe Jim's been stepping forward more.
Yeah, for sure.
As a result.
In either case, it's sounding really nice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
If you can't decide between wrong and right.
And then we get to the actual chorus. And I remember when this first came out, you and I were enjoying the lyrics in the chorus. Queen of the firmament, Lord of all beneath, Masters of the universe. We're all refugees.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us about this.
That's right. Yeah. So, okay. It's great to see the firmament back again.
Mm-hmm. This was Breathe era stuff.
And Earth and Sun and Moon.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And Jim loves the firmament. Like, you know, just the appearance of the word firmament, this is a Jim song.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We already know this is a Jim song, but Jim puts firmament in everything he can. So Masters of the Universe was just hilarious to me, right? Yeah. Because us 80s kids with our Nintendos and our, you know, our pixelated fonts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And our Saturday morning cartoons. And,
yes, we were also the Saturday morning cartoon. It's where actually I was just telling my wife about how in the 80s it was Reagan, talking about conservatives, who allowed, before that there were really strict rules about kids' TV, about advertising, and about tying products in and appealing to kids. And all that was struck down in the 80s.
It's the Mattel Chocobot Fun Hour.
Yeah, yeah, where they were allowed to make cartoons with the express purpose of selling toys, building these merchandise empires.
Yeah.
And Masters of the Universe and He-Man,
was
like maybe the first of that wave.
I think so, yeah. Like coming in
successful.
Coming in after the Star Wars figures and toys thing that happened in the late 70s and early 80s. It's like, oh, kids buy toys that are associated with media properties. What if we had like a commercial that ran for half an hour every Saturday morning? This could make us a lot of money.
That's right.
So do you think that Jim is deliberately choosing to use the term Masters of the Universe in conjunction with, like, is he doing some sort of consumerism thing here? Or is he just saying, he's talking about, you know, those that have power over us, lording it over us type thing.
That's why I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And given that this song is like for the kids.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know.
Okay, I'll give you that. I'll give you a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just where did the 80s font come from? You know, like,
it's
all these things. Are these all a deliberate? Or are they just all coincidences?
It almost sounds like you think it's a conspiracy.
Well, not a conspiracy, but like a plan.
Yeah.
Like that these are related.
Yeah, maybe we are finding some reason behind why this was used.
I was trying. You would hope that there's a plan.
Yes.
Right, to bring this stuff together. I don't know.
Yeah. So the next thing that sticks out to me is there's a really clunky line at 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And in many countries, they adore celebrities.
Okay, yeah. Did you and I ever talk about this?
I think that we did talk about this way back, but that is a clunky line.
Oh, I think, okay, so this is, I think, the final time I'm going to be negative today. It's a horrible
line. Not me.
Like, to me, to me, it's a terrible line. And in many countries, they adore celebrities.
Yeah.
And to me, it just comes out of nowhere. This is a reminder. I brought this up on the Powder Workers group, and some people were totally defending it. Fine. But to me, there's a narrative here. This is the chorus. This is the part of the song that gets repeated.
Yeah.
This isn't just a line in a verse.
Right.
This is
the place where you do your best work.
Yeah.
You know?
It should be your best work. It should be telling your message as best you can. The first four lines are setting us up in a great way, I think, about the Masters of the Universe.
We may not understand what it means, but it sounds cool. It's evocative of some sort of power struggle going on. That's great.
Yeah.
But then in many countries, they adore celebrities. Well, duh, that's kind of like what celebrities are. They're people that people adore in many countries. You know, there's some countries where people don't like celebrities. It's just a real clunker. And I think that they had the structure of the song and the melody going on. And it's like, maybe that was a placeholder at some point and they were going to rewrite it, but they just never came up with something better. But they didn't finish that. They didn't finish the chorus.
This is an unfinished chorus. Yep. And there's no continuation of the thought.
Yeah.
It's just a weird interjection. What is the point of it? And in many countries, they top their fries with cheese. Or, you know, you could think of all kinds like, you could say, oh, okay, well, the point is, like, this is a pretty literal song.
Yeah.
Right? Most of it.
Sure.
Maybe it's like, people just adore celebrities. So this is an example of people not having their priorities right.
Okay,
this is an example.
Yeah. How about this? Yeah. You know, like, some people might even vote in a president who is like a celebrity of some sorts, not necessarily based on merits. Oh, you know, that actor Ronald Reagan, that that guy who was in WrestleMania, Donald Trump, wasn't that his name?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Like, yeah, or let's maybe try some, to think maybe of what some they're doing rock, here. Some rock singer would get elected to become the environmental minister or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
that would be so strange.
So it's a terribly specific example, yeah, especially in this repeated chorus. So maybe it's about how popular culture distracts us from what's important.
Okay.
But surely lots of things are distracting us from climate change besides celebrities. Like, aren't economics, how about consumerism or our own convenience, or that we feel powerless to do anything about it? There's all these things. So,
and even if you wanted to convey that message, workshop that line, because it's not working that way.
Yeah.
You can get that sentiment across much clearer in some other form. I can't. But you're the pros. We're paying you to do this.
Yeah. So maybe if that line, if you really want that line, that goes in a verse somewhere, but the chorus has to be different. Here's a trick. I have a solution there. I'm not just going to be negative.
Oh, good for you. This is good.
Yeah. I have solutions. Okay. And I got this, the great songwriter, Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, yeah.
He does something that's awesome. Do you know what his trick is? His way of solving this.
He writes about fat people.
Well, yeah, that's right. Well, he writes about food.
Yes.
And sometimes fat people.
Yes.
Okay. So, but no, that wouldn't be his solution. Do you know what neat trick he does that would solve this problem?
I'm sorry, I don't.
He will write multiple choruses where he will substitute a line or two. I think he does it for two reasons. I think he just does it for variety to keep you interested. Yep. But it's also because when he knows he doesn't just have, maybe he might think one line's not so great, but he's not sure what's better.
Yeah.
Or he has a bunch of lines he wants to fit in.
Yeah.
So what he'll do is the chorus will still be recognizable. Of course, it'll have the same melody, but it'll even have mostly the same lyrics. But you swap out that one or two lines.
That's actually a really great technique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is Weird Al. I'm sure there's other people who do it, but Weird Al does it a lot.
So what you're saying is Weird Al is a better songwriter than the Oils.
I think he could improve this line.
Yes.
Okay. So here's some examples, Darren, of how I think Weird Al. So
how he might sing the chorus to Rising Seas.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I already gave you the they top their fries with cheese one.
That's a good line.
Okay. Yeah. So that's the most Weird Al one. How about he tries to get a bit more serious because after all, the Oils are paying him the big bucks. Okay. So, and while Parliament ignores your pleas.
Oh, that's good. Is maybe work on the meter a bit, but that's good.
While the industries cut all the trees. Is it like
it's not better, but it's an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
industries, like, that even has the accents in the right place that you could stick at the end of the line. Look, me and you could come up with something better.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just send us our check, Jim.
Yeah. Yeah. Many places they do as they please. I know these are kind of bad, but they're not really worse.
They aren't. Yeah.
And so at least what you could do is, like, you're just doing different ideas.
Yeah.
And while the pesticides kill all our bees.
There you go. That was really topical, but in 2017.
It was.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody's talking about the bees dying. While the corporations spread disease.
That's good. They've got us on our knees,
yes,
Robin.
Yes. While they laugh at tragedies.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
You've got lots of good rhyming words.
While the suited cannibals trade guarantees.
I like the suited cannibals line. That's good. That's a throwback.
Yeah. That's a throwback.
That's a good, that's a deep cut.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, you get the point.
Yes.
It's not that those lines are, maybe one or two of them is a bit better.
Yeah.
But you just rotate.
Or you just workshop and find a better line. Like, yeah, you've got a lot of good rhyming words that fit at the end of that thing.
That's right.
Come on.
Somewhere in there, there's something better.
Nitpick? Much? Yes. Yes, we do.
Okay, I watched eight. I really like the song. I'm still not done with the song, but...
Oh, I'm not done with the song either.
Okay, let's keep going.
I want to keep it going. Yeah, okay. Keep going. So around 3 minutes, 12 seconds is the end of this first chorus. And I want you to listen to the melody line at the end of the chorus and how it goes down. Open up the floodgates to the rising sea. The last note is kind of going down a little bit because we're going to come back to that at the end of the second chorus.
Okay.
More nice little guitar bits that are Capricornia-ish. Let's just keep going because there's more good Capricornia-sounding guitars here from 320 to 330.
This is a relevant time where we talk about the video.
Okay.
Did you see the video for this?
Do you remember? I haven't rewatched, no.
Yeah. So when this video came out, they did something very interesting during that solo or during that instrumental. Mm-hmm. Prime Minister Scott Morrison,
okay,
the conservative prime minister at the time in Australia, yeah, makes an appearance in video.
Is this the place where he's like got the lump of coal?
He's got a lump of coal. Yeah. He's in Parliament, I think. He says, "This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be worried." He's showing it around.
Yeah.
And they play that clip. And so for the first number of months, we heard this song. This was the only way, I think. It was this YouTube video.
Yeah.
Scott Morrison's speaking during the song. Yeah. But it didn't make the final. Like, I think, yeah, thankfully,
yeah,
they didn't include it in the studio version.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's talking. He's making his fellow members of Parliament, he's making the ones around him laugh.
Right.
Like this don't be afraid of coal thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's one of those kind of publicity stunt things.
It is.
It's like, I think the reason people are scared of coal isn't that they don't want to touch it.
Right.
It's when you burn it, it really pollutes,
yeah,
and so on.
And you know what? Okay, I'll just mention this right here. You know, we're talking about the maybe distastefulness of like these political one-liners or this political, it's not showboating, but it's theater, right?
It is.
The oils kind of do that in Bark a Darling River. And we'll talk about that when we get there.
Yeah, yeah.
Around 3:47, Jim's got some really neat keyboard sounds going in. Can I play them for you?
Sure. Lost in for gold.
Those are cool.
Yeah.
And that kind of reminds me of the BBC workshop type stuff as well. Like, you know, we were talking about the Doctor Who kind of sounds and stuff like that. It's kind of another one of those kind of grindy sci-fi kind of sound from the 50s or 60s.
Yeah. Like it's some sort of delay feedback thing that Jim has lots of fun doing.
There's a fun line in the second verse here. Dinosaur stories, reliving past glories, lusting for gold. This is what I like.
Yeah.
Fishing for souls. Fishing for
souls. Yeah, it's neat that he delivers it in an interesting way.
And that is an example of, okay, we've got a meter in our song. The line is fishing for souls. How do we fit that line to the meter? Fishing for souls.
Yes.
That's a great way of doing it, as opposed to let's throw in and in many countries. Okay, that's how we get the right meter to the line. I'd be interested to know if Pete kind of contributed the delivery of that line, if Jim just wrote fishing for souls and was expecting Pete to sing it more straight.
Yeah.
And not to get all Christian-y or stuff on you, but this fishing for souls is a metaphor that Jesus uses for evangelism.
Yes.
And depending on, you know, how you look at things, you know, the firmament is something that God created in the beginning, right? It's kind of like the sky above where all the water. So, you know, there are other, what I would say are biblical allusions in this album. You know, is this one here?
Well, yeah, and the whole thing, like rising seas, we're talking about another global flood.
Sure.
So this is very much like the Bible begins with an apocalypse. Well, not right at the beginning, but, you know, early on. There's an
apocalypse early on.
Yeah, early on, there is a worldwide flood, which many cultures have as part of their backstory.
Sure.
It's not just Judeo-Christian thing. It's many have a Noah-like figure and a flood. But I think it seems very appropriate in a song about a new kind of worldwide apocalypse flood to make references to those stories.
Cool. Yeah. There's some nice guitar ka-chunks in the song around the 4-minute mark. And then there's this high rising, I don't know if it's a keyboard part or if it's a string part going into the pre-chorus around 4:08. Did you hear that? It's kind of like, I don't know, it's maybe some more of Jim Spacey sounds there. The line where Pete sings, "Well, it looks like rain," his voice kind of starts to falter a little bit there.
Yes.
Yeah. And I presume that that's a deliberate choice in his delivery there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's neat. And there's kind of Spacey background vocals in there too, I think.
I think I hear Jim there.
I think it's mostly Pete and Jim.
Yeah. And then we've got like the instrumental bridge kind of going into the chorus. Another strong example of Capricornia-like guitars.
A good, clean guitar sound. And yeah, it's a nice little... And to me, it still feels a lot even like Blue Sky Mining.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that for sure.
That's
yeah,
why I'm hearing that too. Yeah.
And maybe that's just like an Oils kind of sound, right? You know, and we've just kind of heard it kind of change a little bit throughout the years. And so I'm just hearkening back to Cap. But when I was listening to Cap, maybe I was hearkening back to Blue Sky Mine and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's just a real sense of them not doing these kind of meadly guitar solos and them not doing these big bendy notes.
Yeah.
And instead, they're doing these really efficient little simple melodies, but just so confidently, so strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really sounds like Jim singing the background, singing the BGVs for We're All Refugees. In this next section here. I don't want to sound patronizing or anything, but like he's really finding a good, strong voice. I think it sounds great and I'm glad to be hearing him.
Yeah, it's just kind of come at the right time. And I don't know if he's just kind of felt he's got to step up with Rob stepping back a little or if he's just gotten more confident. You know, he's been doing more and more solo stuff. And the context of background vocals, I think he's excellent. Like,
definitely.
Yeah.
And so the last chorus comes to us and they extend the last lines of the chorus there. Mm. They've got like the echo bits. Open up.
Open up.
The floodgates. Floodgates to the rock. And then this is why I made you take a note of how the line kind of, the melodic line went down a little bit. This is where it rises into the soaring end. Okay, and before we listen to the whole thing, Rob's got like the machine gun snares going in there. That's something that I'm appreciating more as a drummer. Throughout my drumming life, I've always wanted to be able to do those big fills all around the kit on all the toms, just like these big, like, you know, like those are cool, right?
Yeah.
But you know what is also really effective? Snappity, snappity, snap, which is this kind of stuff that Rob's doing. And then Rob brings everybody in for the landing at the end with kick snare, tom.
Okay, so on this album, Jim and to some degree Pete both actually talked just a little paragraph or so about each song on the album. And I don't remember them doing that before.
Where were they doing this, and why don't I remember it?
I don't know. I can't remember where I found them.
Okay.
I remember 3+ years ago having just copied them.
Okay,
good. Because I saw them.
Yeah,
And I
that's
had them.
Smart.
So I don't know. Yeah, I wonder where they did this. So anyway, Jim just said, "Rising Seas has been burning a hole in our pockets ever since we started tracking it 2 years ago." So he said this upon about release.
Okay.
So he's saying that they were tracking it in late 2021 is when it was released.
Yeah.
So sometime in 2019.
Yeah.
They were tracking it. "The climate crisis calls for a real sense of urgency, so we decided not to wait any longer to share it." Basically saying this is why we chose this as our opening.
Okay.
As the first single.
Right.
And Pete says, "We encourage everyone to make their voices heard in their own way on this existential issue. Mm. The Prime Minister is fiddling while Australia literally burns." And this is when they had all those fires right? "Scott Morrison may have reluctantly accepted net zero emissions by 2050, 50, at last, but that's nowhere near enough. No more coal or gas, and a clear plan to cut carbon pollution by at least 65% below 2010 levels by 2030 is urgently needed. The rest of the world knows that our future will be all about renewable energy. That's where the jobs are. That's the only way to avoid a climate catastrophe. We all have a right to let our leaders know that they need to do much more to address carbon pollution, and they need to start right now." So it is such a literal song.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it gets a little poetic in the chorus there about celebrities. So yeah, that last line, "open up the floodgates," that really is a straight way. If you really think about it.
Oh, yeah.
That's like let her rip, like just kind of like admitting complete defeat in a way, right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, let her rip. And basically the equivalent of like, go to hell. This is it.
Well, yeah.
Right? Like, it really is. This is a very apocalyptic song.
Yeah.
Like it's, this is where, you know, the guys here really believe this is the end.
Yeah.
And we're heading right into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty heavy. Like, I mean, time will tell, right? If this is the reality or not, if we, you know, if we're still here in 25 years in our late 70s, and I don't know enough to say it will happen, but I'm also not going to say it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, yeah, in a way, there's a mismatch between the upbeat song and how it's like, open up the floodgates, you know? Like, but I guess we can just take it as an irony. I may have already said, I'm glad they didn't just make the whole thing a dirge.
Sure.
Because I don't think we'd be nearly as positive about this song.
Yeah.
So the actual video for the song, there was the official one that released in late 2021. It just had two things I really want to mention. One is that it has a great tribute to Bones. So you haven't watched the video?
Not in lately. Years.
But basically, there's as many videos do, there is a section where they're, I guess, lip syncing, performing the song, so to speak, with the band. But it's just the four of them. But if you look, not even that carefully, if you look carefully, but even if you don't, Bones' bass.
Oh, yeah. I remember this.
Yeah. So they're all playing, you know, Rob's hitting the drums and so on. It's the band playing, but without Bones, but his bass is there on a music stand. It's a really nice tribute that they released that first.
Right.
That was kind of their farewell to Bones, because later videos do feature Adam.
Yeah.
A bit.
I do recall there being a video for one of the songs where they're kind of like on a beach or kind of where the tide comes in and out type thing, maybe a roadway by it. And Adam's in that one.
That's right. So that was after, and that was kind of a funny thing.
Was that for Rising Seas or for a different song?
That was also for Rising Seas.
Yep.
So what they also did was they did kind of a semi-live video, and this is with Adam.
Right.
Where they went down, it's like a beach, but there's a lot of rocks, and actually there's still puddles, so it's kind of like
It's a tidal type
thing. It's a tidal type area, and they appear to actually be playing it live. Like, it's not the studio mix of the song.
Okay. I want to go back and take another listen.
Yeah, it only has 60,000 views compared to like 500,000 on their official video.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a lesser known thing. It looks like they're all wired for sound. You can actually see the band members have their in-ear monitors on. Mm-hmm. Everything's mic'd up. I am not sure how it sounds like a studio recording, though. And when they're out on a beach, you can actually see how strong the wind is at times by like pushing their hair and their clothes and so on.
Yep.
Not Pete's hair so much, but the
his singular hair.
Yeah, the hair, his ear hair there. But so I don't know how much Voodoo, you know, like in the end, but it has lots of nice drone shots.
Yeah.
Kind of neat to see Adam in there.
Yeah.
So they actually did two of these. So later we'll get to the other one, where they did these kind of funny live studio-esque recordings. And maybe it was just part of getting ready to hit the road. Maybe it's good practice for them.
Right.
To just engage in a technically challenging video shoot that involves some live element.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Cool. My homework is to find that video and give it a listen to compare it to the album version.
Yeah.
That's good.
I think you'll notice that they are not, it's not the same mix anyway. Yeah. They're not. Okay. I think it's a different, it's them playing it again.
Yeah, cool. Robin.
Yeah.
By the clock on the wall, we're way over 2 hours into our recording session.
But we've talked about a whole song.
We have. So I propose that we say goodnight. And then secretly, through the magic of podcast editing, we put together another, maybe a shorter podcast to come out next, where we talk about the songs that we're prepared for right now. So we're actually going to keep recording, but we'll say goodnight now, and then we'll put out maybe another chopped up version of this podcast.
Yeah.
The listeners don't need to understand anything of what I've just said. We should have known better.
Well, I think I knew all along, but
I should have known better.
Hope springs eternal for Darren. He's such an optimist.
Speaking of hope springs eternal, I got to go to the bathroom.
Okay.
All right.
Springs.
So, do you have corrections, comments, or hate mail for us? Like, we apparently hate this album?
Yeah.
No? Send them our way by visiting...
By vizzing. I really got to go for a viz.
I got to take a viz. Send them our way by visiting us at our podcast webpage, darrenfolds.com/podcasts. There you will find, if you look around, contact forms and ways to get in contact with us. So, for Robin Harbrin, I am Darren Folds. We'll see you real soon.
Yeah. And hey, I do like this album. It's really good.
It is.
I just had some other things to say about it, too.
Stop dragging it out even longer.
Okay, bye.
Good night.
Good night. Every child.
I want to call it old growth forest.
Yeah.
Paper, textury paper on the CD. You know, that's good for absorbing the grease as well. Yeah. I'm going to just wipe my beard with it. Yeah. Stop footying your microphone stand.
Well, I moved it.
Yeah. Don't.
Wait, why don't you want me to move it?
Because I can hear it.
Well, I'm not going to keep moving it. I'm moving it to a better position.
Oh, when Robin gets excited, he starts peeking. Look, you can't have the big waveforms and get excited at the same time. Just be normal.
Okay.
All right.
Waveforms get even bigger when excited.